Coming up, Umberto Eco discusses his highly anticipated new novel, The Prague Cemetery. And then later, Anthony Bailey tells us about the life and work of the great Spanish painter Diego Velázquez. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. We're also available as a podcast, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC support comes from Carl's Appliance, offering a wide selection of major appliances featuring Sub-Zero and Wolf in living kitchen settings since 1941. Directions and information at carlsappliance.com. Jazz at Lincoln Center, presenting the music of Astor Piazzolla with saxophonist Paquito de Rivera and others, exploring the blend of tango and jazz. November 11th and 12th at Jazz at Lincoln Center, Time Warner Center, 5th floor. Tickets at jalc.org. Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, the best cancer care anywhere. With outpatient cancer care facilities in New Jersey, Westchester, and on Long Island. 800-525-2225 or mskcc.org.
WNYC listeners, Legacy Circle member, Sandy Berger.
If I turn on the radio, it's WNYC. I don't listen to any other radio station. And there just came a time when I said, okay, they've done so much for me. Let's see if there's something I can do in return.
Find out how to name WNYC in your estate plan. Call 646-829-4587 or email legacygiving@wnyc.org.
The Miller Theater at Columbia University supports WNYC and presents an evening of works by composer George Lewis on Saturday, November 12th at 8. The International Contemporary Ensemble performs with a world premiere on the program. More information, millertheater.com. WNYC is giving away a pair of tickets for the concert to the third call to reach us at 646-829-3985, but please note if you won anything from WNYC in the past 30 days, you're not eligible for these tickets. One of the most cited documents of modern anti-Semitism is a massive forgery, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. It was fabricated by the Tsar's secret police to look like the transcript of a meeting of Jewish leaders in the late 19th century who were discussing their plans for global Jewish hegemony by subverting the morals of Gentiles and by controlling the press and the world's economies. The document spread throughout Europe and was embraced by a new generation of right-wing thinkers, including a young Adolf Hitler. In his latest novel, The Prague Cemetery, Umberto Eco imagines that one man could have been the author of the Protocols of Zion and was responsible for fomenting much of the prejudice and hatred of the 20th century. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and it's already an international bestseller, and I'm delighted that it brings the legendary philosopher, semiotician, and novelist Umberto Eco back to our show today.
Hi.
Hello. Your protagonist, Simone Simonini, is a master of disguise, a forger of documents, a double agent, a liar, a glutton, a relentless bigot, but he wasn't a member of the Tsarist secret police.
No, but in fact, the only technical proof we have about the protocols is that they were published in 1905 by the Russians. But what happened before is very, very complicated. According to some, they were certainly started in France, because it was proved by the London Times in 1921 that they were in part copied by a book published in France against Napoleon III by Maurice Joly. Then what happened in between is a matter of controversy. So I was obliged to invent a central figure able to put together all those elements.
Was it fun making him so unlikable? He may be one of the worst people ever in the history of literature.
Yes, that's my pride. To have invented, I always tell a story that after she read my book, my wife, she read it only when it was finished, because before I never show my books to anybody. She said, oh, now I understand why you, in the last 2 years you were so bad.
You were grumpy. Because do you get into your characters?
Huh?
Do you get into your characters?
But you have always in some way to get into a character, even if you are Jack London, if you write about a wolf or a dog. Anyway, but my purpose, yes, was to make him the most repugnant character for, I would say, for moral reasons. He is maneuvering such a dirty material that I had to keep my reader away from. But then, step by step, I was taken by the taste of the narrative. Narrative endeavor, and so well, the idea of. But I was informed that one of my colleagues, Shakespeare, was creating also repugnant characters, Richard III of Iago, or many others. So I am in good company.
Oh, a lot of wonderful repugnant characters in the history of literature. But you wrote your college thesis on St. Thomas Aquinas, didn't you? And he theorized extensively about the nature of evil. So is this something you've been interested in for a while?
But listen, I am a philosopher, and every philosopher is interested by evil.
Huh? Or even if evil exists.
Since I started my studies as in the Middle Ages, you know, that's from St. Augustine on, the problem of evil. But my personal story was rather the problem of being interested with lie. You presented me as a semiotician. Well, a semiotician is concerned with human languages, not only the verbal one, but and to lie is a typical human characteristic. A dog doesn't lie. If he barks, it means that there is somebody there. If there is nobody there, he doesn't bark. Men, on the contrary, are able to lie. So it's an important philosophical and semiotical problem. Being interested in lies, I was interested in forgeries. And I have extensively written from the academic point of view on forgeries. At this point, I met in my life the protocols, because they are the paramount forgery, as you said.
And some people still believe them.
Listen, the scandal of the protocols is that they are self-contradictory. I define them as a Frankenstein monster made up with parts of different corpses. So nobody should take them seriously, but it seems that they are able to reinforce pre-existing prejudice. Second, after they were proved to be a forgery by 1921, they were believed more and more. So it means that the internet is full of sites with the protocols. The Arab countries, it goes without saying. So it constitutes a problem.
Well, Simonini doesn't just hate Jews. He delivers long diatribes about his hatred of the ancient Greeks, the English, the Gypsies, women, the Freemasons, Jesuits.
Everybody.
Nobody seems safe. But the level of his spite almost seems comical at times. It reminds me of the father in Céline's first novels, who rails against the Jews and the Freemasons.
If you read the first pages in which Simonini says what he hates, I used the only existing document. So the first part on the Jews was Céline. Mm-hmm. The part on the Germans, the first part was a French nationalist that in 1915 wrote about the enemy, the Germans, saying that they produced more fecal material than any other people. But the second part is Nietzsche. Nietzsche was a great anti-German.
But not an anti-Semite, although he's been accused of such.
What, Nietzsche?
Yeah.
No, but I used it apropos of Germans. Mm-hmm. So I used always pre-existing texts in order not to invent reasons of prejudice, but to use real prejudices.
And you include many historical figures in this book: Sigmund Freud, Alexander Dumas, Giuseppe Garibaldi. Is Simonini based on a real person?
No. His grandfather was an historical person. His grandfather, that when at the end of the 18th century the abbot Baruel wrote a sort of book full of conspiracy theories, saying that the French Revolution had been provoked by the Templars, by the enlightened philosophers, and so forth, a certain Captain Simonini wrote to him famous letter in which he said, but you didn't consider the Jews. And he elaborates in that letter, I would say, everything was then used as an anti-Semitic. If she,
so you borrowed that name?
Yes, but if that Simonini really existed, or even his letter was a forgery, nobody knows it. But the letter existed. So I invented his grandchild. But I invented him in the sense that I am attributed to him many deeds made by different people. But he is the most real of all my characters, because I am convinced that there are many Simoninis around us.
Well, there were no Elders of Zion, but there were Freemasons, Jesuits, Knights Templar, and many other secret societies. Why did they develop in the first place, and why have they been always so associated with conspiracies?
What, they were associated with conspiracies because they wanted to be secret. And so if somebody is secret,
automatically they become suspect.
The great philosopher Karl Popper wrote decades and decades ago a very important essay about the paranoia of conspiracy. He said it started with the Iliad. Since everything happens in Troy was plotted the day before by the gods on the top of the Olympus. And in this sense, the paranoia of conspiracy is a sort of solution of people who doesn't want to feel responsible for something. That's why it's always used by dictators. Huh? It's not my fault. There is a conspiracy. I am coming from a country in this moment governed by Berlusconi, who is always saying that everything happens is a conspiracy of the judges, of the communists, and so on and so forth. So the idea of the general conspiracy, I mean the paranoia of general conspiracy, not the real conspiracies. The world is full of real conspiracies, but they are immediately discovered. If they are successful, they are discovered. There was a conspiracy to kill Julius Caesar, but we knew it the day after. But the general conspiracy, the paranoia of conspiracy, is efficient because you can never isolate the real source. And so you can continue to have fantastic thoughts about something which is ungraspable.
My guest is Umberto Eco. His latest book, a novel called The Prague Cemetery, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Simonini suffers from a kind of amnesia or split personality disorder in which he could possibly be Abbe Dalla Piccola. So you don't want him to just be one person? Is this a matter, again, of dealing with the whole matter of authenticity and what is real and what is not real?
It was accidental. I wanted Simonini to visit the hospital of La Salpêtrière, where the great psychiatrist Charcot was at that time. Why I wanted to... It happens when you write a novel, you can decide, I want also to have this experience. And at that time, Charcot himself and a lot of scholars around him were studying this kind of hysteria that was the double personality. And there was a marvelous book of a certain Dr. Azam, The Case of Felida, a woman who had the split personality that I attribute to Diane Holm in the book.
Well, because the hysterics in Charcot's hospital were pretty much all women, weren't they?
In Charcot, to be honest, was the first to say that hysteria was not only a female sickness, because before it was believed to be, and it came from hysteros from the womb. But he was the first to say that it was also a male problem. At that point, I thought that also Simonini could have a double personality, because it's typical of a forger who tells always the contrary of what he thinks and believes. And so I gave a double personality also to him.
Well, he sets out to write a diary as a way to recover his lost memory. The act of writing actually creates history, doesn't it?
The forgeries, you mean?
Yeah, writing anything creates history. We go back, we find a book, somebody's, this is my diary. We assume that what's there is what really happened, and that becomes part of history.
Yes.
If you look at Wikipedia, We suddenly have, you know, I could send in all sorts of weird things about you, but it becomes part of history.
Your words are horny for my ears, because in my novel that was published on October of the last year, so 15 days before the discovery of WikiLeaks, I said that Simonini believed that in order to sell secrets to secret services, you don't have to tell something new, but to tell only what was already known. Then we discovered that all the messages of WikiLeaks were telling what was published by Newsweek the week before, because the Secret Service embassies are too lazy to stand unheard of information.
Who's your narrator in this book? It's a first-person narrator, but... Is it Simonini?
The book, no. The book has three levels, and I used the three typographic characters to characterize the three levels. One is the journal of Simonini. Another one are the intrusion of the Abbot della Piccola into the journal of Simonini. And then there is a sort of neutral voice who is supposed to read the journal of Simonini behind his shoulders. That's me, or you. Mm-hmm. And this narrator doesn't make personal judgment. He simply registers what Simonini writes. If you want, I was obliged to use the narrator to summarize a certain, because he had to follow a diary day by day. It would be. So the narrator summarizes and dramatizes sometimes the event.
When you were 48 and considered already a leading philosopher, why did you start writing fiction? Were there certain things that you couldn't deal with in your theoretical work, but that you felt were important to write about?
Once I had the tennis elbow, and I consulted the world specialist, because it was there, and he said there are 10 kinds of surgical intervention for the tennis elbow. Therefore, it means that none is good, because otherwise there would be only one. And that's also for your question. I invented the 10 possible answers for that question, but the real answer is that at a certain moment I liked to do that.
Well, this novel reads like a whodunit, I get the feeling that based on your work, you feel that detective novels and philosophy have certain things in common.
Yes. The question, the basic question of a detective novel is the basic question of metaphysics. Who done it?
Mm-hmm.
Who done it?
There are a lot
of cannot be the butler.
There are a lot of drawings in this book as well. Where did they come from, and why did you include them?
There are many reasons. First, all of my book had some visual element. And my last one, The Mysterious Flame of Queen Loana, was completely illustrated. Because my childhood was of a reader of books that were illustrated at that time. And in the 19th century, all the books were full of images. Then, why the images there? I worked a lot to select images from the real books of that time, and they have a double function. Certain images are clearly coming from dime novels, and they must give the reader the impression that it is reading a fictional story. But suddenly, he finds real documents, and so he says, "No, that's true."
Umberto Eco will be reading and signing books at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store next Tuesday at the 15th at 7 o'clock. He's also speaking tonight at the New York Public Library at 7 o'clock. It's technically sold out, but you can check and see if any tickets are still available. The novel, The Prague Cemetery, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you so much for being with us
again.
Thank
you to you.